Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I'm so glad that you have tuned in for today's show. I'm coming to you from Texas, Tyler, Texas, sorry. And we have a little bit of rain here. Don't know what's going on, but we are trying to thaw out from this treacherous winter. It has been cold, wet, windy. It's not been fun to be a tennis player, a tennis coach from Texas since December. But we're making it out of this thing, and I know college coaches have been dealing with the same thing out there all across the United States. So glad you tuned in to today's show. Today we're going to talk to, you know him well, if you listen to the UR Tennis Network, he is the coach at the Citadel, brand new coach out there, Coach Chuck Creasy. He hosts American Tennis, where they talk about all good and bad things that are going on with American Tennis about 2 hours before I come on the air, and he has agreed today to come on and be a guest on my show and talk about the American college system and what's going on, and he and I are going to do battle here today and bring up the good and the bad with what's happening. And I'm so glad that he agreed to come on. It is a continuation of a discussion that Chuck and I started back late last year, early this year, and I have him on every once in a while because he is at the Citadel and he is trying to do some good things within the college tennis world. As many of you know, he has his finger on the pulse of Division I college tennis, in particular the men's side. And we all know that Chuck Creasy, with his many years there at Clemson, his work with national tennis players at the National Tennis Center in Washington, D.C., he has a real interest in what's happening with American tennis, and his passion has always been college tennis. And we're so excited that he has agreed to come on today. If this is your first time to listen in today, I'm glad that you found us live. And if this is your first time to catch a podcast, congratulations. There are other podcasts associated with the UR Tennis Network. Currently we have the Parenting Aces show, which comes on with Lisa Goodman Stone. She comes on Monday morning at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. And then Wednesday, we have Coach Creasy, which comes on with American Tennis with Coach Creasy. Now, we're always pursuing other opportunities, so if you are a podcast listener and you love to talk about tennis and you're interested in hosting a podcasted show, now remember, we are live and it is podcasted, and they go out to iTunes and they are on the Blog Talk Radio site, then you need to get in touch with me. And my email address is jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. And I'd be glad to visit with you about that. Yeah, it takes about an hour a week to broadcast the show, and you always have to research and put an effort into it. It has to be interesting, and you know, there's no guarantee that people are going to listen to you. But we'll give you an hour's worth of airtime each week to spout what your viewpoints are on the tennis world and see if you're interested in or interesting. And we'll let the American public decide. We do know this about our podcast. We have caught many ears of important people in the tennis world through the years. And I want to remind you that I've been doing this for 3 years. When April comes around, we will have hit our 1,000th hour of broadcasting and podcast to tennis, news, information. It's amazing to me that I've been associated with what was once Hat Tennis, Then we changed it to the UR Tennis Network. And here we sit today, 3 years later, over 1,000 hours of tennis news. We've interviewed people that would have never been caught on the tennis world, and people that would have never made it to network TV. And we've talked to them. We've got archives of shows, whether it be college tennis, American tennis, parenting tennis. We've had so many different angles. At one time, we had 6 shows on the air. It ebbs and flows. It comes and goes. I like to think of it as a tennis team. And some people leave the tennis team. They think they can do it on their own. I've been a part of that. And I tell you what, the world's a scary place when you try to do it on your own. And some people find that out and quickly... They can't do it on their own as well as they did it when they were on the team. And, you know, some people find that they can do it better on their own, and that's of their own doing. And, you know, I wish them the best. But we are passionate. I guarantee you that with the people that we have as a part of this network, we love to talk about tennis. Now, on to some college tennis news, and I came across some good news and some bad news or indifferent news of this week, and I'll share it with you. First and foremost, the good news. There was some great news out there this week. Angelo Anastopoulou, he is the head coach at College of Charleston. He is the head men's coach, the head women's coach. He picked up career win number 600. 600 career wins starting back in January 1992. He picked up his first win, and that would have been his first win started with a 7-2 win over Georgia Tech. And 1992, we're looking at, 22 years later, and that's combined men's and women's. He defeated Towson State 7-0. So while we're looking at 23 seasons, he was two classes, an NAIA coach, a Division I coach, 3 separate conferences. He was able to participate in, and what an amazing accomplishment. You know, to get 100 wins at the collegiate level is something very important. 200, 300, wow, that's amazing stuff. Now, to get 600 wins, wow, that is really amazing stuff. So we want to wish Coach Anastopoulou the best. Maybe he'll get 700, maybe 800. From what I could tell from the website and from the coach himself, he looks pretty young. So, you know, you never know what happens out there. And so excited that he was able to pick up that win. He looked like he got a nice ice bath from some of those pictures. Now, March 20th, a little less than a week ago, the junior college announced their rankings. They came out. We had the top 5 men, and I'll announce those, top 5 women's programs. And we had some interesting things happen in that. We had a new men and new women, new men, same women on top. Following the men here, number 1, we had ASA. And if you remember, I went and saw ASA play TJC a couple of weeks back during spring break, and wow, what a athletic team. I told you that you Division I college coaches, shoot, all you college coaches, you needed to get out there and recruit some of these ASA athletes. They were just phenomenal athletes. They really hammered the TJC. They were fun to watch. Lots of enthusiasm, a lot of pulling for each other. ASA at number 1, Laredo Community College number 2, TJC 3, Seminole State number 4, Collin College number 5. On the women, TJC number 1, Georgia Perimeter number 2, ASA is in New York City training at the USTA National Center, St. Petersburg, Florida number 3, State College of Florida St. Petersburg number 4, State College of Florida number 5. Now, Division I men's ranking, we got a lot of moving going on there, Oklahoma had been atop, changed it up. USC comes out number one this week, Ohio State number two, Oklahoma three, Virginia four, UCLA five, Baylor at six, Georgia at seven, eight, we got North Carolina number nine, we've got Notre Dame and number 10, Illinois, and the biggest mover of the week, Florida State. They moved up from 41. On the women's side, this week, Duke stays atop at number one, number two, UCLA, three, Virginia, four, Florida, five, Stanford, six, Alabama, seven, A&M, eight, North Carolina, nine, Georgia, 10, Vanderbilt, and the big mover on the women's side, DePaul University, 35 to number 25. Now, you don't hear that a lot in the women where you have that many, that far a jump. Now, I got two stories here, and I don't know which way to go. So I think Coach Creasy's on the line, and both of them kind of play into things we're going to lead into here. Big news here. We got our other host, Lisa Stone. She's landed a big-time guest. On March 31st, she's going to have the ITA director, David Benjamin, on her show. That's next Monday, and they're going to discuss the scoring changes in the ITA and where they're headed. That's at 12 noon or 12 Eastern, noon Central Time. The other big news that I have, and this is the thing I want to talk to Coach about first here, big news out of Duke University this last weekend. Their top player, number 30 in the nation, Michael Redlicky, suspended for disorderly conduct versus the number 7 team in the nation, Virginia. Now, no real comment coming from the university, no real comment coming from the coach, but just a month ago, this player, who's ranked number 30 on the number 13 team in the nation, was the ACC College Player of the Week. Now, if you'll remember, Duke has a little bit of a history of some controversial athletes over there with their lacrosse team. Now, I'm not trying to connect the two by any means, but a little unusual here, and we're gonna go to Coach Creasy here and see if he has ever had to suspend any players, number one, and two, maybe if he knows any inside information here that might help us understand what happens over there at Duke. So let me see if this is him on the line. Coach Creasy, are you there?
I am, Jason, and it's a pleasure to be on your show again.
Great. Now, help me understand this. Have you ever had to suspend any players from your Clemson or Citadel teams?
Look, any coach who is worth his weight has had to suspend players. Any player is worth his weight has almost been suspended or has been suspended at one time or another. Now, I want to preface this because people think, oh, my golly, what's being tolerated? You know, I like sayings, but I'll tell you this. It's easier to tame a roaring tiger than to inspire a timid pussycat. The fine line, tennis is a high beta sport. We are telling kids to be sophisticated gladiators, very polite boxers or wrestlers. We want aggression under control. Now, here's the point. You know, I know who that kid is, and he is a great competitor. And he probably, in the heat of the battle, went over the top. He'll take his punishment and move on, and nobody's at fault here. The coach probably had to do the right thing, and the player will take his medicine and move on. Now, I would rather have him 100 days in a row than somebody that doesn't get close to the competitive edge that we need in players. But I just am explaining it this way, Jason, because I this is a very aggravating thing to me, how we're teaching kids to be hard triers but not teaching them how to be competitors. So it's always like handling energy. It either works for your good or it blows the stack off. Now, the proof is in the pudding. We don't have, Jason, any great players coming out of college right now. One of the top 100 players went to college, USA players, John Isner. In 1984, yeah, we had 39 39. So the proof is in the pudding. We're making, what are we doing, Jason? Just making a bunch of nice kids who try hard? Or are we making competitors here in our country? So the double-edged sword is, yeah, yeah. Hey, buddy, you know, get those blinders on. You know, you're a Ferrari. You're always going to be in the shop with the hood up. But, buddy, you know, this is a sport to honor. It's not about you. But by golly, don't you back off your competitive instincts either. So that's my two bits, man. I hope you understand that one.
And to do, I do, way, Coach, and, you know, I really think you're on to something here. I mean, it just seems like that you're right on here. We're taking, I like your analogy here, gladiators and trying to tame them. And then getting a little bit cautious here when they get emotional and trying to put them into a little bit of a problem.
The definition of sportsmanship is never bring shame on the game or your family name. That's simple. That's it.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
What is that? Okay. Well, that's it. Each person defines that, and you honor the family game, the game, when you die on the court fighting to win, not playing to be a hard trier, not playing because you're a great kid and you tried hard and you did your best. No, that's part of it. Listen, we got to teach our kids to compete. Can I tell you a quick story? The other day,
please.
I'm talking to my guys. We have a very interesting phenomena here at the Citadel. It's a fantastic place. I haven't seen things done this with young men and young women in 30 years, where they are masterfully broken down, but then built them up. They're built up to being great, great leaders. Most people don't like that broken down part. Actually, in 91, Dennis Emery, a coach, Hall of Fame coach from Kentucky, told me, you know what? We don't have enough. We can't do enough work with our kids anymore now. The NCAA's taken away all of our hours. I guess you can't break them down to build them up. Now you have to just build up whatever's on that foundation, whether it's good or bad. So now the point being is that I have kids here that they are tough at being tough, and they never go backwards. But there's a part of every competitor that they have to learn to go forward as well. And that own individual drive that a human being has, we are curtailing because we are trying to say, oh, my golly, you've got to be in a certain box. No, I'd like to see a competitor like a Sampras versus a Courier versus a McEnroe versus a Connors versus a Malavia Washington. All of them, what? Competitors, but they're all different, Jason. They're all different. They have to define that. And I sure like, I have my opinions about Duke lacrosse, too, you know, as a coach, you know, if you want to talk about it, because that sure got the raw deal. That coach got the worst deal in history. It wasn't his fault, and it was proven not his fault, but he was made the scapegoat. That's pathetic. It was
one of the worst
things ever.
Coach, we've had, It's a bizarre deal. We had Tony Minnis on here who had to deal with the athletic director, Joe Avila, who was the athletic director there at Duke. He was the director for Tony Minnis at LSU when Tony was let go, and it was kind of a bizarre situation. It didn't seem like that Joe
like
sided with the coach.
You know what the Pontius Pilate syndrome is, don't you? You know, I mean,
tell me about it, Coach.
People do the politically correct and expedient thing for how it looks instead of digging deep enough and doing the correct thing. I want to tell all of your listeners, today I was trying to explain to my assistant coach about doing the right thing even under pressure. Go to YouTube and look up the movie Courageous and look up Javier job interview. Any of you can look that up. It's a 6 minute and 40 seconds video, and it's stunning that this is what sports is supposed to teach us. But look up job interview, Courageous, movie Courageous, the Javier, J-A-V-I-E-R, job interview. It's tremendous. But,
yeah, it's a great coach. I've seen it, and you're right on. You're right on.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyhow.
Tremendous mess. Yeah.
Good for Ramsey. Good for this kid. And listen, Radulecki is one of those kids we need to be a great, not just NCAA player, but a great pro player. That kid was born to compete. I love the way he competed always. And you know what? If he goes over the top a little bit, you know, so he's a little bit more of a, what I want to say, who's a fiery quarterback in the NFL instead of, you know, he's not the Peyton Manning, he's somebody else. You know what? I just get sick of us trying to define what a competitor is. He's a competitor as he is, you know, and that's what we need. And I mean, he's different than Mitchell Frank. He's different than Jameer Jenkins. He's different than, you know, any of the, but be number one as a competitor, how you are. But we need competitors, Jason. We're making marshmallows out of our kids, man.
Well, Coach, you know, and before we get off this Radulecki situation, you know, I used to, when I was a college coach and we had situations like this, I quoted a great wise man once who used to say, you know, you got to have breakdowns before you have breakthroughs. Does that ring a bell here?
Yep. I've got an article. Anybody wants it, I can send it out to you. I just sent it up to a coach who was going through a four-match slump the other day. And he's gone through 4 months left. I said, you know, the sky is always the darkest before the light comes, or you know, there's a lot of analogies you use, but breakdowns happen before breakthroughs. I got that saying from actually a race car driver I sat next to on a plane one time, and he said he trained for 3 weeks with his car and it broke down the first lap. I said, how do you handle it? He said, breakdowns always happen before breakthroughs. I quit now, and the weak ones will quit. I have to go back and do it again. So, wise words.
Well, it's great advice, Coach, and I'm glad that you sat down next to that race car driver, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, you and I, we agreed today we'd come on and talk college tennis, and we got these I love what you call them. We got this Bullwinkle system out here. We got four or five of them, Coach. You know, there's so many of them. We got so many different changes happening. I don't know how we keep up with them. I've tried to keep up with them and what's good and what's bad. The important thing, I think, in all this was we were trying to fit college tennis on TV, and I've researched this, Coach, and I want you to know that in my research, I can honestly say here that the college tennis isn't cracking anywhere in the cable TV. It's not drawing anywhere near the top 100 on any of the cable TV rating systems that I can find. And that bottom number in that is about 400,000 views. So what's happening out there? I mean, we're not getting a lot of people watching college tennis on TV.
Let me start by saying if they get popular on TV, and even if it's 50 teams and they want to do a hokey pokey show or the Bullwinkle system of scoring, and I'm going to call Benjamin, I want to debate him, because when we started the MDTA, folks, Men's Division I Tennis Association, Jason, if you could, every week, please read the CTO, College Tennis Online /MDTA coaches poll. We have coaches vote every week. And every 2 weeks for the rankings. It's a new poll started out that the ITA had a chance to jump on board with the CTO back 10 years ago, but they declined. But the point is the MDTA is originally we set it up to work through the ITA. They did not want to do it. So we started our own association. It's the MDTA, Men's Division I Tennis Association. The ITA is made up of 10 organizations, D1, D2, D3, NAI, and junior college, men and women. That's 10 organizations. And my logic and Coach Randy Blumendahl and Coach Gene Orlando at Michigan State when we set up the MDTA was, listen, it's like states' rights. We're Texas. The women are like California. D2 is like state of Tennessee. It's like states' rights. We need different rules, perhaps different points of view, because they're different animals, but all coming together as one. The ITA did not want to embrace the MTPA. They asked us to be a focus group, which we've been that route before, Jason. 7 or 8 years ago, myself and a man named Tim Cass from New Mexico, who's there now, who's largely behind, by the way, the trying to get matches on TV with an abbreviated format. But we tried, and they asked us to wait. They would do more than what they had done. In the meantime, we had more teams drop. Presently, over 400 college teams have been dropped under the supervision that we have right now. So I'm going to go on and talk to Lisa Stone, too. I'm going to come on as a caller, and I'm going to be one of the either points or counterpoints. But I want the truth to get out there. We have a very, very poor infrastructure right there of what we need to have happen. 39 players versus one. The proof is in the piece. You can tell me another U.S. player that trained in U.S. colleges that's in the top 100. Can you name one? Steve Johnson in there yet? Maybe. I think he's 90. Maybe that's two. Anybody else?
No.
No, Coach, I can't figure out. I mean, out of the players that are supposedly going to climb the ladder, the proverbial ladder in this, what player out there has the goods to climb that ladder? I mean, it's not going to be Stevie Johnson. It's not going to be Bradley Funk.
There's two things. With tennis, you know, I wish we would go to a thing like golf, Jason, where they had a tour card. So you have this whole system right now where you have in tennis hundreds and hundreds of players entry level, and they basically clog up the forward moving of players. You have everybody knows this. There's no future in the futures. So, you know, players come out of college and they try the whole mentality of college, by the way, is awful. Players go to college and they get diluted, polluted, prostituted, basically, with their dreams. Their dreams, I'm saying now, okay, so people don't misinterpret that. But their dreams get diluted. They can't practice as much as 20 hours a week. Give me a break. Come on, my daughter practices ballet, or, you know, my daughter is doing 20 hours of swimming a week in the summer, and she, you know, 20 hours a week. Oh, 25 matches is absolutely ridiculous. It's not format. It's for not addressing that issue when it came up. We need 50 matches. Baseball has 66, Jason. Dang it. It's so aggravating trying to make players with 25 dates of competition a year. It's laughable. You know, it really is. Now, add on the fact that you can't play but 24 weeks a year, 20 hours a week, to the point that we have a dual match format that is extremely antiquated. Dual-matched tennis does not develop players in high school, nor does it develop players in college. You get pigeonholed, and you basically end up being how small you are and playing the same level, you know, each time out. Tournament tennis develops players. So we've done away with tournament tennis. And people argue in the 80s we had a lot of dual-match, no-ad scoring. Yes, but we also got to play 10 to 15 tournaments. I had a player, Lawson Duncan, who got to 48 in the world, who played 86 matches in 1 year. You know, so now we're playing 20, 25, and you'll see the problem with college tennis. But if we were turning out, Jason, you know, if we were turning out 50, 20 good players a year into the draft, like football or basketball or golf or track and field or baseball, even swimming does a better job than we do at turning out players. If we were doing that, I would keep my mouth shut and not spout off. But my golly, it's aggravating. You know, they just cut us to bits. They've regulated us down into mediocrity in college tennis. So, you know, I don't know what else. I can go on and on and on. It's not format. Look,
if they want to do the Hoochie Coochie show and get it on TV, let's do it for those teams that are on TV. But let's keep a developmental process, full matches, 2 out of 3, singles and doubles. People say don't go back to the 80s. What was wrong with the 80s? We develop players. It's not entertainment. It should be education, not entertainment. You know, so we if but with that being said, if they wanted to do a 3-point set and have guys spin around and do all this crazy stuff, no ad scoring, tiebreakers at 5-all, you know, I mean, it's laughable to think that your good players would want to do this. So I'm anxious if Benjamin comes on and says it was a hit. It is not the truth. Players hate the Bullwinkle system, you know. So, anyhow, Jason. So,
well, Coach, you know, you hit on some interesting, you know, facts and ideas here. I mean, when you look at the NCAA football system, when you look at the NCAA basketball system, when you look at the NCAA baseball system, these are training grounds for professional athletes. The NFL draft that is about to come up has recently showcased college football athletes, and they will turn out in huge numbers. 7 rounds of college football athletes will then go out into the professional football world, and they will you know, whittle them down to the best few athletes to get onto these professional football teams. College basketball, the same way. Numerous rounds of college basketball athletes will be able to live out their dream and be drafted by NBA teams. And yet, you and I both know that as we sit here today, we do not have an American talent that is going to make it this year into the professional tennis world as a top 50 professional tennis player.
Without a doubt. Now, Jason, I'll give you another one. We currently have 6,000 young boys and men making some kind of a living playing baseball with their single-A, double-A, farm leagues and the beautiful way they do it. We have 14 players making a living in tennis. 14. 14 in the men's side. So my son is 8 years old, and he's on fire for baseball. You know what? I'm going to nurture the baseball. I'm going to teach my kids how to play tennis, Jason. But it is, and listen, I can go after player after player after player. Why would a parent want their children to play tennis in tournaments if they're 14 make a living? And by the way, let's go. Oh, college scholarships are the golden calf there, or they are the prize. No, Jason, 65% of all the college scholarships go to foreign kids. We're outsourcing all our money. These teams that have 8 foreign girls on the team, Jason, and nobody has anything about foreigners. It's about having every scholarship going to foreigners. And Jason,
right.
8 of them is $500,000 a year of our tax money. Title IX was not set up to protect. Title IX was not set up to protect women from Spain or France or Uganda or daggone China or Thailand. It was set up to protect girls from USA. That's it, USA. And somebody even asked,
You're right, Coach.
After player development for, this coach said, are you after player development for your team or for the country now? And the trap was he had all foreigners on the team. I said, USA, man. And you know what? They're going to do the training on my team. You know?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and you know the college coach, and I've said it before on my show. There are numerous college coaches out there that are used car salesmen that are not college tennis developers, and they spend the majority of their time selling various points of their program either through the internet, through an email, through a Facebook post, and never understand the intricacies involved in teaching a kid how to work his way through a match, through a training session, or through a season. And if the kid doesn't work out, they'll ship him off to transfer him to another university and bring in another kid from another international place. and not spend the time on the court actually teaching the kid how to play tennis, because the coach doesn't know the first thing about tennis. And yet the university, because tennis is viewed oftentimes as a minor sport, a non-revenue generating sport, they just go along with it because they're bringing in athletes, tennis athletes, who score well on report cards.
So I'll tell you a quick story. Okay, so Battle of Zips. I like to try to figure out easier ways to coin things. I think about tennis in the shower. I think about it before I go to bed at night. I think about it riding in the car. I make notes. I write my books. The point is that tennis is on my RAS, my reticular. I basically think of tennis a lot. Other than God, my family, you know, tennis is my love, because this is how I teach. So anyhow, the coaches say, okay, is it entertainment or education? I've had even young coaches, the thing that's frightening to me, I had a very good young coach recently said, no, it's entertainment. I said, no, it's not. We don't get any money out of this from you people coming to the matches. You don't bring any money in. And do you bring any recognition? You really don't. Nobody even knows how you did last week. Do you know how so-and-so did it? Nobody knows. Basically, it is an educational process for these young men and these women to go through. So now here, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you a quick story. So a good friend of mine this last week, he said, you know, our conference has to turn in the lineups for next weekend's match 5 days ahead of time. So there's a coach there. This is how he finagles this. He turns in bogus names are names of his 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 players, mixes them up on the doubles lineup. So what he does is then when he gets the other people's lineup, he reorganizes his and matches up. So a coach that he has to play this weekend, this is a major conference, put down as their number 3 doubles team, Humperdinck Batman as one of the players, and he'll pull him and substitute. But these guys, I mean, the other guy, it was Humperdinck Batman or something, was a joke. But these guys are saying completely it is entertainment. It is not about the education of these men or these women. And it's disgusting. And the point is, I'm so upset with our sport because we have milked and bled every possible thing out of it for personal gain, and we have stopped honoring the sport. My coin thing to David Benjamin is, you are not bigger than the sport. The USTA is not bigger than the sport. I am not bigger than the sport. How dare us manipulate the scoring system to suit our whims and to suit our needs? Shame on all of us that we are more important and we're going to change this fantastic sport like this. You know, it's just honor the game, honor the scoring system.
Coach, it seems like we got too many hands in the kitchen. We got the NCAA, we got the ITA, and we got the USTA. Which one's got to go?
Well, I heard Steve Bellamy gave a great, and on my show, by the way, folks, every Wednesday at noon, American Tennis, tune in. And we just like this show. Jason, thank you very much for putting me on UR Tennis Network. It's been fun. But the bottom line on the thing is with we have too many butts in the kitchen, basically. It should be more of a one- or two-butt kitchen. But here's the point. Steve Bellamy on 1 week said the unfortunate thing about bureaucracies are they are like a house built in the 60s that was very functional and very efficient. But then you start adding rooms on and another room and another room. And then you're asked one day to go find a screwdriver, and you got to walk through 12 bathrooms, 4 bedrooms, 18 hallways. You forgot what you were looking for, and you're lost. And so you just sit down and do nothing. And that's our organizations, you know, and God bless them. You know, our organizations of the ITA, listen, David Benjamin should be commended for his 35 years of work and giving his heart to this sport, okay? And the USTA, those people are fantastic. I've got 3 of my former players that are national coaches. Jay Burke, Ken Kinnear, John Tisdunes, and many, many of my coaches have gone out and worked USTA or something before. I worked for the USTA for a couple of years as Junior Davis Cup coach back in the 80s. You know, but God bless them for the work they're doing. And Haggerty is really after, you know, with his tour that he did, they're trying to really do the right things and listen to people. And Scott Schultz, what a good man that guy is. He's trying to talk about, we talk about doing away with referees. You know, I brought that up. Let's get rid of the referees. They're screwing everything up. It's the shoe bomber syndrome. A couple people have to use them, and then we got the biggest expense we have. Let's get rid of these referees. Let kids go battle on their own again and work it out. Kids will work it out. You got a Scott Schultz. You got a Bill Mountford. You got, you got Virgil Christian is out there battling for good college tennis things. But these are great people, but it's a bureaucracy. So good ideas get smothered. The efficiency of the good ideas never get put to use. And we just, it's like the government. You know, it's like our government. It just bogs down in its own muck, you know, in its own treads, and its own good ideas sometimes, but it bogs down. And we need to, Jason, the whole key to everything is to stimulate our ground troops, our volunteers on the ground. You know, the Dan Vonks in Kingsland, Georgia, you know, the Chuck Waldrons in Clinton, South Carolina, the Buck Archers who trained so many players in Shelby, North Carolina. And this, we need to stimulate our ground troops and our high school coaches who are so dedicated to coach 350,000 kids in USA. 350,000 kids play high school tennis, but we only have 26,000 playing tournaments. There's a serious disconnect there. You know, serious disconnect.
Now, Coach, now I'm gonna take a little journey here, and I want you just to pay attention to where I'm going, and see if I've got any ground here. We know the last 2 years that the Big Three, the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big 12 have created their own sports networks. They're trying to find ways to put tennis on TV. We also know that the NCAA, the ITA, the USTA have each come out with a unique scoring system that minimize doubles. We know that that in the next couple of years, the Bryan brothers, they're leaving the sport of doubles. It looks like that over the next 5 years, doubles is losing its heroes and will become less emphasized at the junior levels because pros aren't teaching it. And college matches now, as you said, we're going to five game sets. We're playing no ad. Down from 8-game pro sets, down from 2 out of 3 sets, and college pro tennis. There's nobody in the stands watching a doubles match unless it's Roger Federer or Stan Wawrinka playing. It looks like doubles is on its way out, and singles is going to make a run here for a TV tennis, Coach. Is that the way you see it being on the ground there?
Okay, I speak as an educator first, entertainer second. Scoring systems should have two purposes. Number one, it should allow the best player to advance, the best player based on forehands, backhands, and their skill set. 3 out of 5 is the most fair way to do it. That's why they play them in the Grand Slams, full scoring. And how many times have you seen a great player down 2-1 or 2-0, and they turn it? And the best player always wins in 3 out of 5. The more you shorten it, the more you leave it, instead of to skill set, you leave it to basically whims and crazy crapshoot thing where you skew the results. And people say, oh, it brings parity. But it brings parity based on scoring system, not on skill set. So therefore, that's a disincentive for kids to get better with their skill set, number one, if the scoring system allows them to have cheapened results some. Now, here's the biggest point. The rite of passage, as a coach, as a teacher, as an educator my whole life, and 40 years in tennis, I know without a fact, and so does every coach out there listening, that you only go forward with two ways, two rites of passage. Usually, a player wins a tough three-set match, 7-5 in the third, 6-4 in the third, 7-6 in the third. That is like a rite of passage where I have now arrived at a new level. They find themselves in the later rounds of a tournament. That rite of passage is never done with a 10-game process or a 10-point super tiebreaker for the third set. Every time a player wins a super tiebreaker, it's like kissing their sister. It's not really a win. It's not a win. It's, yeah, well, I beat this number one in the country, but it has a 10-point tiebreaker, which is bull crap. Everybody knows it was the scoring system that did it, not the skill set. What's worst is the player knows that they're happy to advance around, but they know that they haven't improved by their tennis. The other thing that advances a player in their career, and this is so critical and why we're not turning out players, and then once again, the proof is in the pudding. So is usually it's done with doubles. Think of yourself, Jason, and every coach listening out there, think of your player who's getting it together, playing better, then they have a good doubles tournament, and they find themselves in the semis or finals, playing on championship day next to the top singles players, and they have arrived. But they do it with 2 out of 3 set matches. Pro sets, again, in a tournament structure, do not give you the rite of passage. It's sort of, I'm okay, sort of, I'm good. 2 out of 3 sets does this. So, The bastardization, again, of a shame on us to bastardize the greatest game in the world by cheapening its scoring system. And if Jason, this is funny. I can get down in those meetings, coaches' meetings, and I'll say, guys, listen. You have to learn how to win 3 in a row, conversions, 3 in a row. If you don't learn how to win 3 in a row, if you don't win the first point of the game, you have to win 3 in a row in regular tennis and regular scoring system. No way, you only have to win 1 in a row. You have to this. By the way, if you're up 30-love, you have 16-1 odds of having a game points. If you're at 30-15, you have 8-1 odds. And Jason, I go on and on. I've studied it for years with the crud that we did before with this. Now, with this no-ad scoring, people say, oh, it makes you tough. Well, the point is, I go on with this, and then finally a guy stood up and said, hey, man, no-ad scoring encourages cheating. And everybody goes, oh, yeah. I mean, are we just stupid? Are we this stupid to where we just, you know, with Jason, I'm sorry, man. It is ridiculous that we think tennis is so shallow that, oh, it makes us tougher and concentrate more, that we have a sudden-death scoring system. No, it doesn't. It bastardizes everything, Jason, and it allows the imposters to go forward, and our real-deal players are held back and brought back into the pot. And we don't allow the rites of passage to go forward. Therefore, we don't have a group of players like a Pete Sampras and a Malavia Washington and a Jim Courier and an Andre Agassi that break out of the pack, because every time they go forward, Jason, every time they go forward, our daggone, dag-nabbit scoring system brings them back into the pot. And Mitchell Frank has to now take losses that he should never take at Virginia. And our top players have to take losses they should never take. And these are by damaging as a wrong boxing match and a wrong loss to a wrong boxer at the wrong time, and it crushes careers. It crushes careers. It's not about forehands and backhands. It's about players learning how to carry leads in our scoring system. It's about them learning about war zones. It's about them learning the power of momentum and how they manage momentum when they're ahead, how they change it when they're behind, how they advance when they're even. And unless these skills are learned with the scoring system, we have a bunch of robots that hit the ball pretty good. So, thus, what do we have? 3 16-year-old players, kids get up into the pros, the top 100, Jason, what happens to our kids? Where do I go? Well, sorry, you didn't build the foundation early enough by playing enough tough matches. So, Jason, this scoring system thing is a self-induced suicide, and that's what we need to call it. It's a self-induced suicide. We're killing ourselves. And folks, if you want to call in and talk about this, I'll talk and talk till the daggone roosters come up tomorrow. I mean, I will talk all night about this because it is horrid. And what they did at the ITA to push this thing through this year is just disgusting. It's disgusting. And I'm anxious. Tune in for Lisa Stone's show. And as much as I respect David Benjamin, And he's a Harvard grad, and I went to Tennessee Tech. And I was a secondary education major, and he might have been a lawyer. I don't know. But the bottom line on the thing is that, daggone, I'll battle him forever on this. It's about saving our sport, Jason. It's about saving our sport.
No, I agree, Coach. And you know, it is you know, I often at times wonder about this, and I think it was on your show that I heard somebody put it so eloquently. You know, it seems like we're going about this the wrong way, where we're changing. The idea here is to make the experience more pleasurable for the fans, and yet we're making it more detrimental for the players. You know, we're not thinking about it the right way. I mean,
look, they took off some of our college matches to put on bowling. I mean, they canceled some of them, Jason. Okay, now do you think the people are going to run out to a match and say, whoa, I heard they're using this new Bullwinkle system, man? They don't go that. Two kinds of people go to these matches, those who are tennis lovers and those who are the lovers of the players, the family members, our friends. The real tennis lovers love tennis. It's not about the casual person. You know, and look, a sport like chess, something like chess survives because people who play chess have kept it pure. And you always have chess players. The shame we have is we have a sort of like tennis game. Oh, is this tennis? No, it's sort of like tennis. Oh, the game formerly known as tennis. Oh, golly. It's really something. I'm just so aggravated by it. And I argue with my wife I should have been a daggone football coach or basketball coach or something. I get so aggravated with these people that minimize the greatness of this game. If you think you can change it around to suit yourself, shame on you. It's bigger than all of us. You know, and the tennis gods will never smile on us. They're just leaving us in the dust now because we haven't honored the game.
Yeah, I agree, Coach. We're in bad shape, and I don't think that we've got the leaders in the right spots. There's going to have to be someone, you know, a Ronald Reagan type personality. We're going to have an Abraham Lincoln, a George Washington that comes along and just says, you know, we've got to have a Beatles type revolution here and turn things around. And man, you want to talk about having to travel through some mud to get there. I mean, it's almost time to just kind of wipe the slate clean, throw out all the rule books, to throw out every bit of information we understand about college tennis as a sport and say, okay, let's just start over.
Maybe. It might get that broken, unfortunately. It might get that broken. It's very broken right now.
Coach, I'm seriously afraid that within 10 years with the USTA influence and what's happened, that it could become a circus like the World Team Tennis, where we got colored courts, we play in 2 hours, we've got men's singles, women's singles, men's doubles, women's doubles, and mixed doubles is a tiebreaker, and we've got 3 or 4 tennis athletes on the campus, and that's it. Totally.
Well, yeah, but understand something. Those type of things only happen when there is a lack of value placed on what someone is doing. It's nothing about money or fame. It's about substance and value. As we have devalued the sport by making it serve us, and I'm talking from junior tennis up, with people saying, oh, he plays tennis because he's going to get a scholarship, or he's going to play tennis because he's going to get a ranking. Not he plays tennis to honor the game. You know, but we have devalued the sport to a place where now it is no. And listen, I want to say this in the right way. There are places that value the game. The Little Mo organization, folks. The Little Mo organization honors the game from the late Maureen Connolly Brinker, and they're preserving the values and the traditions. And put your kids in those Little Mo tournaments. And there are some college coaches who are purists that are doing the right thing. We have some hokey pokey shows going on there that recruit only internationals, and they're just trying to win. And they're saying, oh, my team, basically they just don't do the work to train up
You got to coach them up, man. Men, women, coaches out there. You got to get these USA kids and coach them up. And we got to make them into leaders more than just tennis players. But I don't see it going away. But you know, the thing is, we need to. The answers are there, but unfortunately, it's like drinking water out of a fire hose. The answers are all there, but we don't see them because it's too many bureaucracies, too much information, too many people looking for the quick fix instead of the honoring that with the game.
Well, Coach, right quick, let's talk about some fixes. Let's give a few ideas here. I mean, is it more than 20 hours a week training? I mean, what would you go to, 30?
Now, the first thing that would be very natural, that would never pass. First thing is natural, we got to separate our seasons. Half the season has to be individual season, the fall individual, spring team, or I'd prefer the fall being this Randy Blumenthal's idea, fall being team, spring being individual, that like Texas High School. Then the players have the team camaraderie, but they have the individual tournaments. We could have the best amateur circuit in the world if we would have half of the season be only collegiate tournaments of individuals, where individuals could springboard. 2 weeks of individual tournaments, look at the Melody and Dan or anybody at John Isner, when they break out, they do it in 2 weeks. Players play for 4 years in team format and never break out because it keeps smothering them and bringing them back into the fold. So we need tournament tennis for college, number one. Number two, we do need to address the real issues. The real issues are not getting on TV. That's a ruse. There is another agenda. You'll have to ask Mr. Benjamin next week. It's not about TV. It's a ruse. I think there is an agenda to try to get men's and women's teams together, which would be the death of what we're doing, you know, because I've been in athletic departments long enough that the best athletic departments like University of Texas, University of Tennessee have equal but separate athletic departments, men and women separate, and they compete with each other and they both go to the moon. When you make everybody operate under the same rules, you basically have a socialist mentality in society where nobody runs forward, nobody's left out, and that in college is critical. The foreign issue has to be addressed. David Benjamin, please address the foreign issue. He will say right away on her show, well, we saw lawyers, and lawyers said we could be a lawsuit. Well, they never challenged that. By the way, we have it's already happened, and we have a history of this being done in junior college, as we only allow two foreigners right now in a junior college programs. That's what we need to use for college. Not one foreigner would gripe about this. They would understand. They think we're fools right now. They think this is candy land. This is gumdrop land where they come and get all the goodies if they don't make it on the pro tour. We need to really look at Title IX as the greatest rule ever made for young ladies, not a great rule that was very poorly implemented. It was never meant to crush men's sports, but it is crushing men's sports. We need administrators who actually care about tennis and not just – most administrators look at tennis like it's the number 12 guy on your team. Please don't get picked up for a DUI. In other words, we had front page news in the New York Times sports section, Jason, if you remember, about 2004. It showed an NCAA champion of that year from a Texas school, I'm not going to say who, holding the NCAA championship trophy in 1999. It had him holding a check for $11,000. That was a professional tournament check. And then we named the kid National Senior Player of the Year for the most improved. Give me a break. Is that pathetic or what? We need these things addressed. It's not for Matt. It's for not addressing these things, Jason. It's for not stepping up and saying, no, this is wrong. We will do it this way. It's for not putting things on the table. It's for not honoring a 21-19 vote that the ITA had to not, where Bullwinkle system was not even on the floor, but they went back and did their own thing anyway. That meeting in I drove 9 hours down, set through a 5-hour meeting, drove 9 hours back, and I drove back thinking, hey, this will be fine. This went really well. At least we have a good compromise. We were supposed to do One set for doubles, full scoring system, regular score, honoring the scoring system. And then in singles, was supposed to, only change was supposed to be a tiebreaker at 5-all. 21-19 over NOAD for the whole format. They went back in the back room and they decided, I want him to answer this. They went back in the back room and said, hey, listen, 21-19 is not a mandate, so let's do what we want to do. And so, you know, it's preposterous, terrible, and bad. it's so aggravating. So our meetings, by the way, putting men's and women together, Jason, at the NCAA tournament, 51-2 in 2004, it was voted against. They did it anyway. 51-2 is sort of a mandate, and they did it anyway. So there's an agenda behind the scenes that has nothing to do with TV. That's a ruse.
Well, Coach, you know, I know you're very passionate about college tennis, and I know that for many years it has treated you well, and I know that the Citadel there is to have you on board there. So before I let you go today, help me understand, how are things going there at the Citadel?
I have never been in a place where I feel more honored to be. I walk across this campus, and I want to earn people's respect, even if I was the lowest janitor or garbage man here. I am at a place of honor that started in 1842, and it does not allow any man or any woman a rite of passage with that they have not earned. There are no participation trophies. These kids come in, and they learn that they're going to learn leadership, highest degree. Every young man, every young woman finishes their degree with a minor in leadership training and ethics. It is the number one public institution in the South for the third straight year. It is in the great town of Charleston, which is the number one destination, according to U.S. News and World Report. If you want to be a pro player, folks, what do you need? You need discipline. It has the culture for professional human beings here, and professional tennis will be one of the things. I'm developing right now on a scale of 1 to 10. I have an 8 as a schedule. I will have a 9, and I will have a 10. And on top of that, then it's about the right people and the right chemistry. So those five issues are the things that I believe in, and we are going to go to the moon. And let me tell you this. John Kennedy said in 1961, we will go to the moon. In 1969, we did it. And that's the way that people must believe. Our current situation says you can't do anything without 15 other people helping you and the right things. Here at the Citadel, they say it's more important what happens inside of you than what happens to you. This place is fantastic. I'm honored every day that I will be here and that they let me work. And I have something to believe in much, much bigger than myself. And I'm honored to be a cog in the passion in what is going on here. And so, you know, it is a blessing beyond belief that at this stage in my life that God would give me this chance to go and work in such a fantastic place. And I would not go to any school in America and be this proud, I promise you. And you know what? It's going to be fun. Each day, the kids get better, and they do not go backwards because everything is built on solid granite. The kids go backwards with achievements when they get scared or failures when they get afraid in common life because they're built on weak foundations. You know, so is that a good enough sales pitch for the Citadel? I hope they
and
keep
Coach,
me.
You do an incredible job. I've had a great time listening to you today, and I know that the Citadel is a great fit for you, and I know that that those kids are some of the luckiest men in America when it comes to getting a great college coach, getting a voice that not only lifts them up and motivates them, but gets them ready to play a college tennis match.
You're very kind. The God has these youngsters here, you know, so. And thank you, Jason. You're very kind. I'm going to give every ounce of my life to trying to pass things on to these young people. We take care of our circle of influence is the person in front of us, and we really need to honor that and understand how very, very important it is.
Yes, sir. Well, I look forward to the next couple of days and weeks listening to you again on your show, and thanks for coming on today, Coach.
Hey, you can talk to Lisa. Ask her if she'll let me come on. I need to do it. That could be a little bit of fireworks, folks. She's going to bring
yes,
all
Yes, sir.
The
yes, sir. I will. Here. I'll do it. I'll give her a call and see what we can do, Coach.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you for the work you do, and thanks for our tennis network. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Chuck Creasy. Chuck, by far and away, one of the most passionate coaches in America when it comes to tennis, when it comes to college tennis. And those kids out there at the Citadel are some lucky kids. And as we said, as a follow-up to this show on Monday, David Benjamin, he'll be on Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces show, and you just need to listen to that show live if you can and call in and see what's up with college tennis and where it's headed. And I just want to thank you for listening in today. Get out there and hit some tennis balls, and we'll see you back here next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.